Welcome to the Castle of Spirits True Ghost Stories podcast. This is brought to you by castleofspirits.com, a website that's been around since 1998.
Seven.
1997. I stand corrected. And when you go there, you can find more than 4,600 true reader-submitted ghost stories and paranormal encounters.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we do on this podcast. We're reading some of those stories.
Because I know that you're busy. You don't have time to sit and read 4,600 stories.
Well, let's be honest, Jane. Mm-hmm. And you are Jane.
I am Jane, the ghost keeper.
And I am Vince, the ghost keeper. Mm-hmm. Ghost keeper Jane, let's be honest, though.
I try not to be.
These days, the only time I really read stories from the Castle of Spirits is in preparation for doing our show.
Well, yeah, you don't bring your work home with you.
Well.
So, Vince, I really liked the intense eye contact that you gave me during that whole intro. It was a little unnerving.
You like that? I've been working on it.
Mm-hmm.
Because I figure if I ever have an encounter with something scary,
you need to be able to stare it down.
Whether it be human or entity mm-hmm. or spiritual or otherwise, mm-hmm. I got to get that down.
Yeah.
I can't just like immediately just like start crying.
Well, they can smell your fear.
And I can smell their feet. Anyway.
Wow.
We are here to share.
They true... don't have feet. That's why they glide.
Oh, okay. Okay. Now, this is all new to us.
Anyway, did you say something just now about we have true ghost stories to read?
We do.
Okay.
I have chosen two ghost stories to read tonight.
I have chosen two.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. That math works out. It almost adds up to four.
Almost. Yeah. We're working on it, folks. Be patient with him.
Give me the abacus.
Go ahead and read your story. How about that?
Sounds good to me. This is a story that was submitted in June of 2002 by David in California. It's a true ghost story, and it's called On the Other Side of Death. Let me preface this story by saying that it is 100% true. I still wonder if I was dreaming, but I swear to you, I was fully awake when I made this phone call. On a very warm summer afternoon, I was alone in our house and was taking a nap on the sofa in our front room. I was having a strange and melancholy dream about my brother, who had died a little over a year ago. I don't remember the details of the dream, but I remember that he kept telling me a certain number over and over and over. When I finally woke up, the number was still sticking in my head. It was a 7-digit number. After a few minutes, I realized that the string of numbers was a very familiar phone number. I just couldn't place a number at first. Then I realized it was the phone number of my grandparents. They had died over 10 years prior. My deceased brother and I were very close to them and often called them to talk back when we were in our elementary school years, which is why it was so familiar to me. I don't know if it was because of the heat or because of the lingering emotions brought on by my dream, but I got a crazy notion to call it. The phone on the other end rang 4 or 5 times, and then someone answered. My heart started racing. I was expecting a message that the number had been disconnected. When they answered, I didn't really know what to say, so I asked, "Is Dottie there?" Dottie was my grandmother's name. There was a pause, and then the voice said, "Who is this?" I said, "This is David." Then there was what I would describe as surprised laughter on the other end of the line. Then the female voice chuckled and said, "Oh my God, it's been so long." I said, "Who is this?" The voice sounded slightly perplexed, and she said, "Why, it's Nana." Nana was the name that my brother and I used to call my grandmother. Only our family and my uncle and his family knew that we'd referred to her as Nana. I felt my stomach getting queasy from fright and disbelief, and I squeaked out, "Nana?" The voice said, "Yes, it's so good to hear from you, David. Let me go get your grandpa. He's in the rumpus room out back." Now, my grandparents had a part of their garage in the backyard that had been converted to a full bar with a pool table and a couch, which they referred to as their rumpus room. Just then, the line got very noisy. There was a squealing sound, and the line went dead. I felt a weird mixture of relief from the creeps that I was getting from talking to my long-since-dead grandmother, and disappointment that I didn't get to talk longer to her or at all to my grandpa. I have called that same number again in the recent past, and I got the message that this number is no longer in service. I really don't know what to make of the phone call. It seemed that the person really was my Nana. It sounded like her voice, but younger than what I remember, and because she knew about the rumpus room. Is it really possible to make a phone call to the other side? And that is a question that I pose to you. That was David in California in June of 2002 with his true ghost story, On the Other Side of Death. I've heard of stories like these. Jane, what do you think?
That was great. I was thinking about my own grandparents, you know, who died just over 10 years ago, and, you know, how I would feel. And it was both, you know, like you said, chilling, but also, you know, makes you feel hopeful and makes you feel sweetness and, you know, but I have called my childhood phone number. It's been a long time. It's been many, many years. And it almost feels like a violation to do so.
What happened? Did anybody answer?
Yeah, somebody answered. I think it was a business. And I'm pretty sure I just hung up. But it felt violating. You're like, no, this is a number, because it's a number that you identify with part of your life, right? It's part of you, and now it belongs to someone else.
Well, yeah, you don't want to call and weird. Find out somebody else is using it.
Right. I would almost rather call that number and have, like, 6-year-old me answer the phone. I don't know. I mean, also, that would be just totally cool.
Here's a thought experiment that I've heard recently.
Okay.
You get a chance to talk to yourself when you're younger, maybe 6, maybe 12, maybe in your teens. Mm-hmm. You have 30 seconds, mm-hmm. maybe even shorter than that. Mm-hmm. What do you tell yourself?
Don't marry the first one.
Good. Good answer.
What do you say? You dial your childhood phone number. Beep, beep, boop, boop, boop. Little baby Vinny answers the phone. What do you say to him?
Well, the problem is that you have to be able to tell them something that is going to make them remember
this
phone call.
You're thinking about this way too much.
You have to convey something. You can't just tell them, for example, invest in Apple. Because would that make your life any better if you suddenly decided at the age of, well, whatever, 16, 18, to invest in Apple computers or whatever? And how would you even remember that? So that's not even that's not even worth attempting, I don't think.
I think you've gone off the rails.
I think that I'd probably say, hey, Vinny, what's going on?
Okay.
What did you do today?
Great.
No, I would just have a really quick, basic conversation. I wouldn't tell myself anything, because anything you tell yourself is going to change everything else that happened. And then you're never going to get to the point where you're going to be able to make that phone call in the first place. It's confusing.
It is.
But to get back to the story, telephones are creepy.
Telephones are super creepy. And we've talked about that before. Like when we used to dare each other to pick up the phone in the basement in the last house we lived at, we didn't have a landline number, but when you would pick up the phone, you could still hear like dead air on it. It wasn't just like dead.
I remember
it was creepy. A
couple days after my grandmother died, I picked up the phone and I said hello.
Ooh, that's so creepy. Were you so creeped out?
I would have been creeped out if she'd said hello back.
Did you expect her to?
Not really. Oh. It's kind of like those times that I've been listening to old Art Bell shows and I call the time traveler line just to see if I can get through, and I don't get through.
Yeah.
That, you know, that's always.
But you've done that recently.
I did that in the
you
last
called the time
years.
Travel line like in the last year.
Yeah, I mentioned it on a previous episode of the podcast.
Oh, I forgot about that.
And it was a trippy experiment. One day maybe I'll get through.
Oh, that would be awesome.
But until then, I will continue to read these creepy ghost stories and paranormal stories, because I enjoy that.
And, you know, dear listeners, this is a good time for you to dig up old phone numbers from your past and give them a try, see who answers.
But beware of what you may find.
It's true. So I have a story, if you'd like.
You do?
I do.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Bring it down a notch, pal.
All right. Dialing it back.
This story is called Extra Passenger, and it was submitted by Anonymous in USA, December of 2004. This story occurred as I was on my way back from college at approximately 10 p.m. in January. I decided to take a shortcut over the mountain to get to my home. Had I have known what waited on the mountain beforehand, I probably would have opted to take the extra 20 minutes to go around instead. It was in the winter, so the birch trees were bare and skeletal, lining the winding roads. Snow was covering the ground, and only gray boulders stood out from the trees. There were no dark areas other than the depths of the woods, just white snow and trees. I had my radio on and was singing along until it became too staticky. During this point, my cell phone gets no service either, so I passed the time by lighting up a cigarette. At some point, the road only allows you to go 25 miles per hour between the potholes and turns, so I was going fairly slow when I heard a terrible womanly voice squeal out from the woods. I can only describe it as a hideous banshee yelp that began in a lower gurgling moan and then belted out in a wail at the end. I kept thinking that it could have been a coyote, but I've heard them many times before and this was human-like. The more I tried to clear my head from scary thoughts, the more the wailing echoed in my ears. At this point, I'm freaking myself out, imagining what could have made the noise. And the more I think, the more I feel watched. On top of this mountain by my house is a reservoir that has miles of preserved natural habitat surrounding it. At one side, there is a parking lot where you can stop to walk on the paths around the reservoir. It was nighttime, so it was blocked off by a swinging gate. But inside of it, I could see something tall and slender, robed in black, standing in the middle of the gravel. I knew it wasn't a bear, because it was upright and thin, standing very still, but facing the road I drove on. I floored the gas pedal and dialed random numbers on my cell phone for comfort. I still had no service, of course, so my only comfort was the hum of my engine and the glow of the headlights. Curiosity got the best of me, so I peeked in my rearview mirror to get one last glimpse of the near-vacant lot. That was the biggest mistake I ever made, which says a lot because I frequently do stupid things. In my back seat, I kid you not, there was a person sitting and staring at me. I thought I was going to vomit up my heart and was so scared that I could only groan silently in reaction. I remember the sound of blood rushing in my ears and my stomach's queasy tightening. The skin on this corpse-like face was transparent and gray, with the lips curled up in an evil smile. The eyes were staring right back at me, droopy and dark and empty. His cheekbones looked like they had a thin layer of sheer flesh over top, resembling the thinness of old woman eyelids. I didn't stare long, because by this point I was racing down the mountain like a madwoman. When I glanced in the mirror again, whoever it was had disappeared. I dared not to see him again, so I tilted the mirror as high as it would go. Luckily, by this point, I finally got service for my phone and talked to my boyfriend the entire ride home. I still remember how itchy my sweater felt against my sweaty skin, regardless of the winter cold air. I still drive over the mountain because it is the shortest way home from college to my house. I haven't had any more scary feelings, thank God, but I still have trouble looking in my rear view whenever I drive. And thank you again to Anonymous in USA for submitting Extra Passenger. in December of 2004. Vince, what did you think?
There's something that I often look for in these stories, whether I'm looking on the Castle of Spirits website or when I'm listening to some other podcast or old Art Bell shows with open lines, and that is the ring of truth. This story totally has the ring of truth. When she mentioned that she was scared and so she comforted herself by dialing
just random numbers.
Random numbers on her cell phone, even though she couldn't get through.
Yeah.
That's weird. If I was writing a story, I wouldn't think to do something like that, to have the character do something like that.
Right. Yeah, it's a very random, almost like a nervous tick that you might actually do, but if you are trying to, okay, let's make up a story that's really scary, and what did I do when I was freaked out? You wouldn't think to, well, I dialed random numbers on my cell phone, I guess.
And the description of the flesh.
Oh, it's so gross.
Like old eyelids.
Yeah.
I can totally see that.
Yeah. It was really grotesque.
Now, I can't imagine, though, going back over that mountain.
I was just going to say, and yet she still drives that mountain. I would never do it again. I would never drive that mountain again.
Maybe she saves a lot of gas and she's really thrifty.
I mean, at the cost of vomiting up your heart, yeah, I'd be like, you know, I can spare 20 minutes and 10 bucks. Mm-hmm. I'd rather keep my heart in my chest and not projectile vomit it out of my face.
Or allow the thing in the back seat to finish what it started the first time.
Right. For reals.
Oh, she's a daring person, this anonymous person.
Yes, she's very bold.
And if you're out there, Anonymous, and you know who you are, because your name is Anonymous, get in touch and let us know if that ever happened again. And if anybody listening has had any similar circumstance happen to them,
you know, we want that too. You better send it to us.
Now, the story that I picked to read next is interesting because the theme of your story and the theme of my story have absolutely nothing in common.
That is shocking. How weird.
This next story was submitted by Craig Owens in California. He gave us his full name. In February of 2001, long time ago, this story is called Soundstage 4. There are many ghosts in Los Angeles, and when strange things happen to me, I'm usually skeptical. One of my oddest experiences happened at Warner Brothers. In late October 97, I worked on a television series that filmed on Soundstage 4, one of the old stages. Across the street was Clint Eastwood's Malpaso office, and up the street were the former dressing rooms of Betty Davis, James Cagney, Errol Flynn, Joan Crawford, and Humphrey Bogart. I worked nights, photocopying scripts and delivering them to the set and to the actors' homes before the next day's rehearsal. I had been doing this job without incident since August, until a few days before Halloween. That night, rehearsals had ended at about 7:30 p.m., and I was working alone. I finished copying scripts and arrived at the soundstage at around 9:30 p.m. Most nights, I arrived between 2 and 3 a.m., so I was happy to have an early night for a change. The stage was unlocked and dark, so I flipped on the overhead floodlights. The floods always flickered for about 3 to 5 minutes, then cast a pale, dim light before clicking on full. But tonight was different. The overhead lights flickered sporadically, and the dull light never really kicked in. But this didn't bother me at first. As usual, I went from office to dark office, dropping off scripts to the different departments, makeup, wardrobe, props, transportation, etc. But as I stepped out of the assistant director's office, onto a creaky second-floor parapet overlooking the back of the stage, I heard a woman's voice speaking in almost a broadcasting tone. I thought someone had left a radio or a TV on because the voice sounded as though she were reading or reciting something rather than speaking conversationally. Plus, it sounded a little muted. I thought it was weird that I could hear syllables and consonants, but I couldn't connect them to words. Then the voice, which sounded like a 30-something-year-old woman, would rise, then drop in timbre, and there would be 2 to 5 seconds of silence before the voice would begin again. Though I couldn't understand, the woman seemed to be responding to some unknown, silent voice speaking to her. I stood on the wood railing, trying to pinpoint where the voice was transmitting. At first, it sounded like it was downstage and to my right. Next, it sounded like it was center stage, and then the voice shifted to a place impossible to guess. I kept waiting for the audio to cut to a commercial or a music cue or even another voice, but after 5 or so minutes, it became obvious that it probably wasn't a radio or a television. There were too many pauses. So, I decided to investigate. The voice grew considerably fainter as I descended the stairs and faded away completely as I reached the stage. During this time, the overhead lights continued flicking madly, and half of the floods would not turn on at all. I searched the stage thoroughly and did not find a television or a radio. Furthermore, as I walked across the stage, the flickering lights overhead followed me. By now, I was getting spooked. Everywhere I turned on stage, the lights wildly flicked over my head. Yet, as I moved away, the same lights would either stop flickering, grow dim, or just go out. The flickering even seemed to follow me around corners. I thought for a second that this was an elaborate joke pulled by a stagehand, but I did not know any stagehands, and they didn't know me. Besides, who in their right mind would waste so much time and energy, especially after putting in a full 10-hour day? Still, I called out, and nobody answered. On stage, the atmosphere was unusually suffocating and gloomy. There was a weird tension in the air. I am not one to get spooked easily. When weird things happen, I usually just shrug it off and say I'm imagining things. But at that moment, I felt like getting the hell out. So I dumped the rest of my scripts on a downstage table and made a beeline for the door. The flickering lights kept following me, so I started walking faster. I entered the part of the stage that would not light, and as I approached the door, I heard footsteps about 8 feet behind me. But it wasn't just footsteps. It was the swishing of a satin-like gown, along with a light pitter-patter of feet. I turned around sharply, expecting to catch sight of whatever prankster was tormenting me, but nobody was there. I continued walking, and the footsteps resumed. I threw off the lights, announced to whomever that I was leaving, and I practically ran out the door. I hung around outside for about 8 minutes, waiting to see if anyone came out, but there was no one. Of course, the next day, nobody believed my story, since it was so close to Halloween. I asked security a couple of weeks later if there were any unusual reports of disturbances on the lot, and the guard looked at me like I was crazy. And, of course, I continued delivering scripts in the dead of night without further incidents. That was Sound Stage 4, written and submitted by Craig Owens in California in February of 2001.
That was spooky.
I've heard a lot of stories about, well, theaters.
Yeah.
And now sound stages that are haunted.
Yeah. And have you ever been on one of those big sound stages?
I can't say that I have.
I have never been in a big one, but I've been in one that was a lot bigger than I expected sound stages to be. And I imagine that if you're at a place like Universal Studios or, you know, one of those big movie lots, their sound stages are probably 8 times the size of the one I was in. And the one I was in was, the square footage of it was probably 5 times that of our house. I mean, it was big, and they're typically painted all black inside.
When did you go to a soundstage?
I was in LA at the old YouTube studios. It's not there anymore. Well, I mean, the building is still there, but it's not YouTube studios anymore. But they had several sound stages, and most of them were pretty small, but they had one that I was really blown away by the size, and they're all black inside, and they're big, vast rooms, very tall ceilings, but they've got like the sound muting all over. So you go into this huge room and you expect to be able to like hear your footfalls echoing back at you all over and to like yell and hear the echoes, but it's dead silent.
But can you imagine being there at 1 o'clock in the morning, 2 o'clock?
No, that was probably one of the creepiest rooms I've ever been in. And the hearing the footsteps about, you know, 8 feet behind him and the swishing of a dress, that's horrifying. Because in a room like that, there's no echoing. If you're hearing it that close, it's that close. That was a great setting for a truly terrifying story.
Anyway, though, what have you,
I have
Ghostkeeper Jane, to tell us?
Story.
Oh, good.
So my next story is called My Own Home by the Sea.
I almost read this story.
Did you really?
I almost chose this story to read. So it happened finally.
I know. We keep saying one of these days we're going to pick the same story. And I was saying that to Vince before we started recording today. And he said, there's so many stories. That's not going to happen.
I did not read the story.
Oh, you didn't?
I control F through it because I wanted to see if it was named after the Genesis song, which it clearly was.
Hey, but, don't give away the story.
All right. I won't. I'll leave it up to you to tell me the story.
It's a good story.
Do tell.
All right. My Own Home by the Sea, submitted by Ron P. in Oklahoma, USA, July 2005. In 1983, I was a sophomore at the University of Oklahoma in Norman, Oklahoma. And in July, I moved into this great basement apartment there. The apartment was appealing to me from the start, as it was a large, furnished one-bedroom with its own private entrance. The apartment was in an old, three-story brick apartment building called the Grayling Apartments. It was huge. The living room alone had four sofas and still enough room for an office area, which had two recliners and desk and chair, where I did my schoolwork. Even the kitchen had a sofa in it. At the front of the apartment was a bank of windows all along the east wall, next to the front door, which looked out onto my private enclosed porch and steps down from the street outside. This description is tedious, but absolutely necessary for the following. I don't remember how long I'd lived there. Not too long a time, though, when one late morning, I was walking through the living room toward the front door and saw a man, a thin man wearing a brown suit and brown hat, walking down my steps toward my front door. Anticipating the knock on the door, I walked to the door and opened it. There was no one there and no one on the steps. I had the windows in my sight all along and never saw this fellow turn and exit. He had simply never been there or had vanished. I remember being dismayed and surprised and suspected that I simply missed him turning and leaving, so I soon forgot about it. The whole event bewildered me, however. How could that have happened? How did I not see him walk back up the steps and away? Sometime later, perhaps 3 or 4 weeks after this event, I walked home from classes down my steps to the door, and upon opening the door, was shocked to see someone sitting on the far sofa in my living room. He wore a brown suit which looked old, out of place, even old-timey, and this time his brown hat was in his lap. I saw him clearly enough to describe him as being maybe 40 to 50 years old, clean-shaved and trim, thin, and sitting stiff and upright, looking directly ahead, oblivious to me at the door. Immediately, I said, "Hello, who are you?" or the like. After 4 or 5 seconds, this man became wispy and white all over, then positively dissolved into nothingness. I inspected the place where he had sat, and there was no indication that he had been there. The seat was cool, and the rest of the apartment undisturbed. Now I suspected that the man was a ghost, for what I'd seen couldn't be explained otherwise. This was to be the last time that I would see my specter, but not at all the last I would hear from him. I lived in this basement apartment for 3 years until graduation in June 1986. On a few memorable, unremarkable occasions, I would awaken to the sound of someone crying, weeping, and wailing, always in the mid-morning, only to look around, finding no one crying either inside my apartment or around the perimeter of the building. This happened on Sundays, mostly. I remember these being soft crying, weeping noises, which ended when I became alert to them. On two of these mornings, though, both in November 1984, then 1985, I heard the cries and the voice of a man, clearly but far off, outside maybe, cursing and swearing, but loud enough to alarm me to jump from my waterbed to see what the crisis was. Never did I find anyone who was around the place doing such. The next two incidents happened, and I don't remember now in what order. Both happened while I was in bed in that apartment on the corner of Santa Fe Street and Eufaula Avenue in the nighttime. I was lying on my right side, drifting peacefully to sleep one night. I was neither awake nor asleep, but in that stage between the two, conscious of nothing in particular, but definitely not dreaming. All of a sudden, as loud as can be, a voice in my ear shouted, "Ronnie!" The name spoken was at the same time both whispered and as loud as a shout, and heard as opposed to sounding like it was in my head, in my thoughts. The calling of my name caused me to jump straight up and become frightened immediately. My heart raced in panic, but there was no other word spoken, and not any sign of anyone being in the bedroom or the entire apartment. This disturbing incident lasted only that long. Only I had not gone by that name since I had left my hometown to come to college. No one other than my immediate family hundreds of miles away called me Ronnie. I chose to shorten it to only Ron in Norman for the last 4 years. No one in Norman called me Ronnie. On another night, while sleeping in my bed in the middle of the night around 3 a.m., I was awakened by some noise coming from the adjacent living room. As I lay there, awake now and listening for more, I heard my stereo come on. Let me say now that at that time I listened to a jazz and new age radio station out of Oklahoma City. That's where the radio dial was positioned. This radio station went off the air at midnight every night. I know, as a close friend of mine was a volunteer DJ there. The stereo then played one and only one song, then went dead. The song played was by the rock group Genesis, called Home by the Sea. I listened to the unfamiliar song, lying in bed, heard the song end, then my stereo goes silent, and I returned to sleep. I only recognized the distinctive song days later while sitting in the OU Student Union Lounge when I heard it on a jukebox and checked it out. The song, Home by the Sea, tells a story of ghosts inhabiting a house and their travails and trapping a visitor in their haunt. Consequently, this song has become a very large part of my life wherever I've gone because of its reminder of my haunted Norman apartment and the seemingly harmless ghost who simply wanted to relive his life in what he told me. In fact, I call my permanent home now the Home by the Sea in regard to those strange days. Okay, now I'm convinced of my haunted place. Remember that my apartment was a basement apartment, and in central Oklahoma, often heavy flooding rains come. My apartment flooded often due to its depth. I frequently had to stack the furniture and my possessions up to save them from water 2 inches deep on the floor, then suck up the water with a shop vac and take carpeting outside to dry in the sun. Finally, I asked my landlady, Oma J, for some relief. She agreed to have the lawn outside my entrance sloped so rainwater could drain into Santa Fe Street instead of my porch, and lay a raised concrete bank around my porch. She agreed to put down brand new wall-to-wall carpeting for me as well. To accommodate all this, I stacked all the furniture from the living room, all those sofas on their ends, in my kitchen and bedroom. During this period, with the furniture placed like this, one night, I awoke from sleep, needing to go pee. So without turning on any lights, I went to the bathroom, then went into the kitchen for a drink of water. I managed to negotiate my way to the sink and get a drink, but while standing there, I thought to myself that I should have switched on the light coming in to keep from stubbing my toes on all the extra stuff in the kitchen. No sooner had I thought that statement to myself that the kitchen light snapped on by itself. I dropped the glass of water, it breaking in the sink where I stood, and I went limp and fell to my knees in abject fear and disbelief. "Oh, it's you again, thank you," I thought, or maybe I said it aloud. I composed myself, got up, saying thank you again, and going back to bed. With all the renovations that Oma J was doing on my behalf, she jacked my rent up an extra $50 a month. To make ends meet, I worked off the additional rent for her elsewhere in her apartment house. I had the opportunity one of those times to ask her about ghosts and hauntings, whether she had heard of this before, whether she had experienced anything herself. This is what my landlady told me about the building. That the building had originally been the Norman Church of the Nazarene, built in 1911, and that in November 1919, there had been a boiler explosion in the basement, and the resulting fire had taken 8 lives. She added that where my apartment was once the church's nursery. She knew of no other history than that. Then she added that since she had owned the building some 22 years, she had trouble keeping the basement apartments rented more than the rest because of sightings of and the sounds of spirits around and in them, and that I and the other denizen renter, an oddball named Mr. Hammer, who had a much smaller apartment in the basement as well, had stayed much longer than anyone else who'd ever rented the place. Despite everything, I moved away after graduation, but to this day I'll sometimes dream of that pleasant apartment in a brick building and smile and hum the strains of Home by the Sea to myself. Thank you again to Ron P. in Oklahoma, USA for submitting My Own Home by the Sea in July of 2005. Vince, I think that that story is sadly sweet. Definitely creepy, for sure, but sadly sweet, especially like paired with the song. Like that song is kind of sad.
It is, but it is a rocker too. It's a great tune.
It's weird to have a creepy, sad song that's also, you know, a bit of a rocker. But it is.
And I recommend everybody who's not familiar with the song, the people who are familiar with the song, you know you're cool.
Yeah.
The people who aren't should go to YouTube, Pandora, whatever your platform of choice, look up Genesis Home by the Sea and try to find the live version.
Vince's Prague is hanging out right now.
Yeah. Just listen to the song and then listen to the lyrics and just rock out.
Well, know? And I always knew that song. You know, I didn't know all the words, but I was familiar with the refrain and, you know, the song in general. But when you told me, we had this conversation about the song a couple of years ago, and you told me that it was about, you know, a ghost and like a haunted house or whatever. And then I started listening to it and I was like, oh, This song is actually quite sad.
And creepy.
Definitely creepy. But yeah, definitely go give it a check out.
And I want to thank, was it Ron?
Mm-hmm.
For bringing that song back into my, it's the new earbug. No, what do you call it? Earworm.
Earworm.
I've got an earbug. Earworm.
If you have an earbug, you need to see a ENT.
Well, if you, earworms make me think of Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan. And so,
hang on a second. I just made a connection. If you have an earbug.
Yeah.
If you have an earbug, you need to see an ENT.
Right.
Or do you need to see an entomologist?
Oh.
Which do you see?
That's deep.
Right?
That's some deep stuff. Speaking of deep, I think we've got some communiques to read from some of our listeners.
Maybe we do. Let me check.
You guys want to communicate with us, go to the website, castleofspirits.com. There are many ways of getting in touch with us.
Mm-hmm. Let's see. So, yeah, we have a message in the lounge from Donna. And Donna says, creepy podcast, our most dearly respected ghost keepers. Oh, Donna.
Oh, Donna.
She's so awesome. We don't know Donna, but we love her. Night driving along a darkened, hilly, rural road is among one of my favorite scary things to do. Last night, I followed you down that wooded, one-lane strip with my headlights off. Donna, that's dangerous, but thank you. Splendid storytelling and discussions as usual. Stay spooky. Donna, that was awesome. Thank you. She's referring to when I was talking about driving home late at night when it's dark, listening to creepy podcasts and things while driving. There's nothing better than driving on a dark road, listening to scary stuff. In fact, you guys should only listen to our podcast while you're driving. But with your headlights on, Donna.
Well, now we don't want to limit people. I mean, some people don't drive.
It's not safe.
Or just listen to the podcast wherever you can.
That's true.
If you happen to be driving at night, consider yourself lucky.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all.
Just make it as dark as possible wherever you are.
But always be careful. Wear your seatbelt too. What's the matter with you?
Yeah.
Headlights on, seatbelts on.
Podcast on.
Podcast on. Castle of Spirits, True Ghost Stories. Thank you. And if you want to be cool like O'Donna.
That's right.
Get in touch.
Mm. Did you know, dear listeners, that you can have your stories featured on our podcast as well?
Can they?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's
right. In fact, this is something that Vince doesn't know I'm about to say, but it's something he and I have been discussing and has yet to happen. So I'm just going to throw it out there and then that way it has to happen. Hey, I know that sometimes you're a busy person, you're on the go. You have a story to tell, but you cannot be bothered to sit down and type it all out with your thumbs on your cell phone. I get it. We get it. So I can't tell you what it is at this moment because it isn't created, but as of when we upload this episode, it will be, and it will be in the show notes. Vince and I now have a phone number. That's right. You can call us. We're not going to answer. Don't get excited. But you can leave us a voicemail. You can tell us your story in a voicemail. And we will play it on the show.
If it's good. If
it's good. Well, if it's garbage, delete.
Well, first of all, we have some rules. It's got to be scary and it's got to be true.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm a big fan of My Favorite Murder, so I'm just going to plug them. But whenever they do their live shows, one thing that Karen always says is your story has to have a beginning, a middle, and an end.
Right.
So that we're going My Favorite Murder rules here. Your story has to have a beginning, a middle, and an end. Don't come on here and say, so my house that I was growing up in was haunted and it was really creepy and we used to see a guy. That's not a story. We want background. We want a buildup. We want a resolution. I don't know how long the voicemail will allow.
And we want it all under 30 seconds. Yeah.
I don't know. It might give you a full minute.
We have yet to really think this out.
Yeah.
But we encourage.
But you're going to help us think it out. We're going to figure it out together.
Yeah.
Friends.
Just even if you want to call and say hi.
Yeah. If leave you want to call and say something nice-ish to us, That would be great.
If you want to call and ask directions to the castle.
The directions to the castle are, get a pen, guys. Oh, wait. Get a pen. Okay. The directions to the castle.
You didn't give him enough time. You didn't let him wait. Sorry. Hold on. Okay. Okay, now.
That guy over there doesn't have a pen yet. Get a pen. Okay. www.castleofspirits, all run together. It's just one word, castleofspirits.com. That's how you get to the castle.
Isn't that amazing?
It really is. It's crazy what they can do these days.
Save so much money on airfare and gas. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a really...
And look, you're here with us now.
It's an eco-friendly way of traveling.
Look at that guy just walked in.
Look at him.
You see him?
What's he doing there?
No, don't touch that ghost.
Mm-mm. No, I think that is a ghost, actually.
Oh, it's just one of the ghosts. Sorry. I was confused. Oh, and there's the music.
I think, yeah.
Ushering us on. Well, we mentioned the ghosts, and they're like, oh, yeah, and we're hungry.
Exactly.
So, yeah, we have to go. It's my turn, and I'm afraid. I'm not afraid to admit that I cried the last time I had to feed the ghost.
Well, it's part of the job of being a ghost keeper, and I am enjoying this job, and I hope you are too.
I am, except for feeding the ghost. But, friends, remember, you can give us your stories by going to castleofspirits.com, and you'll find all of the ways to do it there. Or you can call our new phone number.
Our fun number.
It will be in the show notes, and once we have it up, we will plaster it all over social media and the website, so you won't have a hard time finding it. Give us a call, give us an email, all of it.
Reach out and touch someone and make sure that those someones are us.